The following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
This episode from Radioland brought to you by our friends at Central Barbecue. Find them online at cbqmemphis.com. We just sent some barbecue actually to some friends of ours, and they completely freaked out. They're out in Los Angeles, and they were like, holy cow, I've never had anything quite like this before. This is absolutely delicious, because they've heard us talking about it all the time. So I said, look, you know, I know these guys very well, and let me do you a favor. You're on your own after this. So they got some ribs, and they got some pulled pork out of the deal, the sauces, the spices, the works, and they became the most famous people in their office because of this. And you can, too, just by going to their website, cbqmemphis.com. Have the taste of Memphis delivered to you wherever you live here in the United States of America. It's worth it. I'm telling you. Everybody, there's a barbecue joint in every town, but there's nothing like Central. Trust me on this. Take a look at their website. You can find their banner ad on our website at radio-memphis.com. All right, let's get on with the show. Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland. Actually, this is part two. Last week, of course, we spent some time with our good friends Cash McCall and Butch Mudbone. Had just a wonderful time with those two guys, and I heard some great music, of which you're going to hear in this episode as well. Just some great stuff all the way around. And you're going to hear more of the story about Cash and Chess Records. Just a fascinating story. Plus, the reasoning, you've already heard the reasoning behind how he got screwed. But, you know, there's repercussions from that. And it lasts a long, long time. And you're going to hear what else has happened. Not revolving around that per se, but as a result of having written all of those hit songs and not getting a single nickel for it, well, Cash is hurting a little bit. We'll tell you about that right here as we continue on with part two, Cash McCall and Butch Mudbone from Radioland.
I do want to make mention of this as well. Butch, you had put out a post about Cash's water heater problem.
Oh, yes,
and
indeed.
That is, first of all, that's a nightmare. God love you for having to go through that. That's a mess. And one thing led to another, and now you got roof problems that go with it. And what we're going to do, what Radio Memphis is going to do, we're going to get together. We know some people. We're going to try and help you out.
Bless your heart.
Even, you know, just letting our audience know that, you know, here's a guy who's a storied bluesman, traveled all over the world, and has been screwed over by record companies left and right, as so often happens. There's a gentleman who's on a fixed income, and it's kind of tough to get the things that you need done to your home.
Amen.
And to have a roof over your head should be something that you should always have. And we want to make sure that some of our people out there can get involved and help. We're working on maybe a crowdfunding thing that we'll tie in with the Blues Society to help out, because I know Mark has been interested in helping out as well. So
God bless you guys, man. Thank you.
Well, it breaks my heart sometimes to hear those stories, that what you guys have done and what you've contributed to the art of music alone should be worth more than just a roof over your head, quite frankly. But if that's the very least that we can do, then that's going to be something we're going to strive to do for
you. Amen. God bless you, and thank you so much, man.
Well, thank your friend Butch over here. He's the one that told everybody about it.
Yeah.
He's over there running his mouth about it, you know. My buddy Cash ain't got a roof over his head. We got to help him out.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what this music scene's all about.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, we take care of our own.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark, I have started to go down the path of setting up a GoFundMe.
Okay.
It's a little bit more intricate than I could probably just whip out in the course of the show. They want a video, they want a story, but I'm going to get with you tomorrow. We'll get this set up. And in the meantime, if you want to help out, I think it's safe to say you can contact Mark Caldwell at the Memphis Blues Society.
Yeah, the Memphis Blues Society. Get in touch with him there. Just tell him that you want to help, and then we'll work out the details for you.
Catch me at newsletter@memphisbluessociety.com.
Newsletter@memphisbluessociety.com if you'd like to help out Cash and get his roof fixed. And you said you might know a roofer
I might know a guy that might be able to do the roof for you. I'll have to talk to him and see if he's not too busy. Right. But
yeah. There's you guys are beautiful. You know that?
Well, you know, you have given so much of your time and your life to this art. And just to have a few minutes with you to play the blues and talk and listen listen to you is it's been a joy for me. And if we can give back in some way, that would be what we can do for you. And we would love to make that happen for you.
God bless you guys. And thank you very much. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
One more thing in that issue of his roof and his water heater breaking, all of the carpet had to come up.
Oh, yeah.
And his
yeah.
wife has been sick, and I believe it's from the mold.
Oh, probably no, no so. Doubt. No doubt.
So yeah. I just wanted to say yeah. that because yeah. all of those issues tied together, and at yeah, that his mold. Age, they don't need to have mold.
Well, no, and, nobody needs that. No.
It goes, you know, we talked to, you know, because we, I know the Blues Society tries to help out whenever there's an artist in need. And the cruel reality of this business is there's not a retirement plan for a musician, and there's not a 401k or a health care package there's not even a musician's union here in Memphis, crying out
loud. Yeah, there is.
Well,
I've been in the union in New Orleans for
They ran the one off here.
Yeah, they ran one out of here.
John Sprott is the president of the union. But see, over the years, you know, when you pay into the pension fund,
right,
you're supposed to get doubled back when you eventually reach your tenure or whatever they call it.
Right.
Well, I called up the pension fund for the musicians union, and I might have only paid $600 or $700 over the years into the union. They said I don't qualify because I didn't pay enough into
it. Well, that's how it always is.
Yeah, and they just stick that money in their pocket.
You can't be a musician without everybody in their hands in your pocket. That's just gotten worse. You know,
that's ridiculous.
I mean, don't take this the wrong way, guys, but you know, if there's nothing there for musicians at your age, what are they going to be for the musicians now? Because nobody values the music anymore.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, you can't be a professional musician. It's tough. You can be. And we had Jack Rowell in here last week.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole band is a bunch of guys who have been playing for years together, and they're all professional musicians. That's all they do for a living. But there was a time when that was a way to make a living. Now it ain't the case.
No, it ain't.
I mean, if you're 20 years old and say, yeah,
Joe, yeah, he works part-time as a construction guy.
Yeah, teaching guitar, yeah. You just can't make ends meet just playing music anymore.
I made more
and there was
money
time when you could.
In the 70s, I made more money for a gig twice as much as I'm making now.
Right.
Three times as much.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? The venues started getting cheaper. They realized, hey, we can get kids that'll play for beer. We don't pay anybody. And it just snowballs from there.
Stuff and
nobody wants to pay 99 cents for a tune, much less $10 for an album.
They don't want to buy a CD for $20.
Yeah, everybody loves the music. They don't care about the musicians.
Yeah.
$5 cover, they don't want to pay that either. Yeah. You know, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's upsetting, but a little more to the point. I thank you both for coming in tonight and having some fun. But you've been down here a few times, and we love having you around. And,
yes,
you
know, one of these days we're going to get Butch to take us on a guided journey.
Well, that will be
on air.
Well, whenever I get my book published, I tried to go through a couple of different publishing companies and. Oh, well, yeah, your book made the cut. Now all you have to do is pay $600 for this and $300 for that.
Yeah, that's a scam.
Say, yeah, right.
Yeah.
You can publish that yourself on Amazon these days.
Yeah, you know.
Speaking of books, Cash, you should write one. By God, dude.
Oh, hell yeah.
People have been telling me that Willie Dixon, before he passed away, his son, you know, all this stuff, write a book. And he told me, tell the truth. Well, Willie wrote a book, I Am the Blues.
I Am the Blues.
That's right.
Well, this publisher that put the book out, the first book that he published, I'm over in Paris, Willie comes, we're playing there somewhere, Willie brings me the book, and he gives me his son, he said, here's something for you, here's the book has come out. And then he said, wait a minute, let me take the book, and he wrote his name in it for me. The cash from Willie. And so, this lady, Gwen Workman was her name.
Yeah.
Little short midget, black lady, worked over there with Monestier, some French guy, booking blues talent over in the, what's that big hotel they got?
Which one?
That big one, huge hotel. They got the Lionel Hampton room in there, and they book blues artists.
Oh, you talking about Montreux?
No, not Montreux. It's the one in Paris. They got two over there now. Oh, God.
It's where Tony did her CD release.
A big, huge hotel. Yeah. All international travelers come from everywhere.
Right.
And so I booked in
Blue.
There. Huh?
The Fountain Blue.
Not the Fountain Blue. But anyway.
The Hilton.
The Marriott.
Will they bring me a book and he autographs it for me? And this lady, what's her name? She comes over, she booked with Monestier book talent over there, blues talent. So she says, oh, I want to read this book. I'm sitting up there because they were paying me $1,600, right? She put me on show. I tell you who was there with. Linda Hopkins. She done passed away now.
Yeah.
So I say, okay, you bring my book back tomorrow. But I'm thinking about all those songs I got to remember. Linda Hopkins had a book this wide. I got to peek that music and stuff. But guess what? She was a great artist, Linda Hopkins. Great artist. And those people in Paris loved her, except for one thing. Her and Ruth Brown. Remember Ruth Brown?
Oh, yeah.
They were doing this play over there. I can't remember the name of the play, but it was very big in Paris. And then they got into it for some reason. Somebody slapped somebody. And it got published all over Paris. But anyway, playing for Linda Hopkins was really cool. You know, I never met Ruth Brown. But I used to listen to her. Mama, he treats your daughter. Me come out to Cotton Field and listen to WDIA, and they be playing it on there.
Yeah.
God have mercy. Am I really 75 years?
Edda did that one, too.
Edda did it?
Yeah.
Now, Edda was cool.
Oh, yeah. She was cool as hell.
You know what? I did a lot of sessions with her. And you know what? It was all crazy, man. You didn't know, I think Leonard Chess had one son by her.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, well, I saw the little boy. You know, I used to be going on the road with Edda.
Is he the one got the burn scars?
Who, Edda Day?
No.
The son?
The son, yeah.
I ain't seen him in years, but I saw him when he was a little boy.
Yeah.
We went by a house, that house Leonard's supposed to ball for. We went by the house, and it was kind of in the rundown path, but these two little boys run out. Pretty little boys. Now I see them, they big, and one playing drums and one playing bass. But they were little guys, and they were really cute little guys, right? And Edda, boy, she ain't alive no more, but she went through a bunch of stuff.
She was right, she lived right across the street from Johnny Otis when we went over there to have rehearsals. I come out of Johnny's place after rehearsal, there's Edda sitting on the porch. Hey, Edda! Hey, Bone! and then she came down in New Orleans, and we was trying to get me and Milton and who was playing? John Cruz.
John Cruz.
Yeah, and Warren.
Warren.
Warren Batiste. Can't get right. Paul wasn't with us then. And I asked Ed at the Blue Saloon on Conti Street, and I asked Edda was in there with Leo Nielsen Telly from the Meters and I can't even remember who. I think George Porter was playing with it that night. Yeah, George Porter and Leo and some keyboard player and that guitar player with the big scar on his face, big old long scar. And I said, Edda, you remember me from L.A.? I say, can you stick around and listen to my band for a minute. He says, oh, baby, I just got in. I got to go to the hotel and everything. Well, maybe for a minute. And, you know, she stayed through our whole audition. and she went up to the guy that owned the place and said, if you don't hire this band, there's something wrong with your ears. and the guy come over and hired us for about 2 weeks from that day.
Get a better endorsement than that.
No, Edda
was a sweetheart.
Edda was a sweetheart in a lot of ways. You know, something I saw her go through a lot of changes, but she was really cool.
Well, you know, she had a girlfriend, too.
She had a different life.
But we'll leave that alone.
That's hilarious.
Cash, did you ever run with Hubert Sumlin at all?
Oh man, Hubert Sumlin. Oh, I gotta tell you about this. I meet Hubert Sumner.
Right.
After being up there a year or something. Because I always used to listen to Howlin' Wolf and love the guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Man, and so, and I didn't know he played with his piece. He didn't use no pick.
Yeah.
So guess what? Two guys that I had heard that I really liked was Shaky Horton.
Yeah.
Okay, guess what? Phil Chess. The Williams sisters or brothers are coming in from St. Louis. Gosh, you got to do this. His main point was me writing songs for them.
Right.
Trying to, every song I wrote, he trying to get.
Right.
So I wrote a lot of gospel music because that's where I came from. And so I love writing gospel music. And, man, getting a group who could really sing was really good. And these Williams people could sing. So the ladies come from the church, and they're all sitting in the studio. And guess what? These songs I'd written, he was perfect on it, and so was Shaky Horton. I wanted harmonica on it, on a gospel record.
Yeah.
So, guess what? Hubert comes in, he sits up. Ladies didn't say nothing. But Shaky comes through, and he smells like he's been drinking all night. Boy, and they sitting there looking. And one lady says, he smells like a whiskey distillery. And look at me. We don't want him on the station. And I was young and probably out of my mind. I said, let me tell you something. I got this man up here because he's going to play on the song I write. And what you say doesn't make a difference. But we're going to tell Phil Chess. I said, go ahead and tell him. See if he'll dare come up here. You know, she was down there. Phil Chess ain't come nowhere near.
Right.
He knew he'd have drove me nuts and that wasn't good. Anyway. Guess what? They're all sitting there, these disapproving things, looks on their face. And guess what? We take off on the song. He was suddenly playing the guitar of his life, bone. Mm. And old Shaky Horton comes in. Guess what he got? A beer can. He blowing that.
Oh, yeah, blowing through that. Yeah.
And boy,
that, oh, it gives it that echo.
Yeah. And I never thought of that, but that's beautiful.
Lord have mercy, we never, this is wrong. God wouldn't like this. I said, God got this man alive and bless him with that talent. He's on the session. Yeah. And guess what? After the session was over, well, we sorry. Your music sounded great music. And you know, I was young and I didn't want to take that. I want to tell him, why don't y'all just go to hell?
Right, right.
But I didn't do that. I was raised in the church, and so I said, I just let it go.
Did you have Lafayette Leak on that session?
Oh, I wish. Wait a minute. I'm trying to think, was Lafayette on it?
Oh, man.
But Lafayette Leak's one of the greatest keyboard players in the world. Willie's favorite keyboard player.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, Willie always was saying,
I love that.
Oh, Lafayette's going to be here. Lafayette sometime come a little late because they was booking, Lafayette was being booked all over the place. He was that great at keyboard. Guess what? Everybody else got music. Lafayette, sitting at the piano, no music for him. He's expected to feel the music. And guess what? One of the greatest keyboard players I ever heard in my life.
Yes,
and don't forget Charles Stepney. Great. And Sonny Long Gone Thompson.
Yeah.
Man, God bless me to be able to see all of these people live.
Otis Spann, I love Otis.
Oh, see him, yeah, be one him. Of them. What do you
think? Yeah, I met him too.
How about
wasn't my favorite. Lafayette Leakes.
Yeah.
Sonny Long Gone Thompson.
Jimmy Dawkins.
Jimmy Dawkins.
You played with Jimmy a little bit, didn't you?
Yep.
George Butler. Wild Child.
Wild Child. I played with Wild Child a lot. Wild Child. Let me tell you something. Wild Child was a problem.
Hey, look up his name, Billy.
Yeah, me and the wife, we heading up, we coming off at 103rd Street, and we going down Halsted Street because we lived on 135 South Bend. So guess what? I see this guy walking. So I stop. That's Wild Child. Wild Child, get in the car. Where you going? Well, I'm going up 118. I say, I'll take you up there. So we're up there. Child, where you been? I just come from Greece. I say, oh? Yeah, I just came from Greece. What are you doing over there in Greece? I was playing on Jacqueline Onassis' boat. And my wife looked at me. She said, And I said, really, my time? Yep, I paid over there. They paid me to play on their boat. And he called a woman, Jacqueline Onassis. I said, okay. You know, hey, I was young. I said, okay. Did they pay you good? Oh, I made great money, man. But Wild Child Butler.
Yeah.
Willie loved him. First, one of the first stations I ever played on was Wild Child Butler.
Yeah.
When they got him in the studio, and some of the older blues guys had a real different take on timing. You know, you know what I mean?
But, yeah, I know, you know exactly.
They're saying, baby, please don't go. 2 weeks. Baby, please. Or sometimes they're rushing, sometimes they're waiting straight.
They're lagging back there a little bit. Yeah.
And so, had it 12 bar one time and 14
the next. If you didn't know how to play with them, you could be in all kind of trouble. But I ran into that in the old quartet days. Me and my brother Leon, because some of the quartets would do that same time stoppage thing.
That's that Mississippi timing.
Yeah. That is. And guess what? So I was used to it. It didn't matter to me. I could catch up with it.
I hear it.
I know you do.
RL used to do that sometimes.
Everybody can't play with guys who do that.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, Wild Child Butler had that in the studio, and Willie come, now look, Wild Child, when I touch you on the shoulder, that's when you start singing. When I touch you again, you stop. And Buddy Guy's over across the way, right? And I forget who they had on drum, but Willie touched Wild Side, and Wild Child still missed where he's supposed to come in at.
Yeah.
And I said, Willie, how can you do this? I said, this boy need to get his time together. Willie said, that's all right. He's a blues man.
Willie's record, Hidden Charms. You produced that record, didn't you?
Yeah, I co-produced it.
You co-produced it, and it picked up a Grammy too. Did you get a Grammy out of that? No.
Now, I tell you what, T-Bone Burnett was in there.
Oh, yeah.
Willie demanded, because he had, what's the name of the drummer from New Orleans, Fats Domino? Earl Palmer.
Palmer, yeah.
Earl Palmer was there. This bass player who was famous was there. And who else? Lafayette Leak was there, and somebody else.
Carrie Bell.
Al Bell.
Neon Blue. Blue.
Sugar Blue. Yeah.
And guess what? Stanley Barron. Who you met?
Oh, Stan, yeah.
Now, Stanley wanted to be on that session so bad. And guess what? Willie wanted him on it, but T-Bone Burnett said, nah, we got to have Sugar Blue. Sugar Blue had played with Willie back in the day, right? So Sugar Blue was there. And Stan, don't get me wrong, Stanley Barron's great harmonica player.
Yeah, he's a good harmonica player.
Really good. But Willie wasn't in Willie's hand at that point. It was in, what's the name, boy?
Who that?
Produced it. Now,
I don't remember who produced it. I thought you produced it.
Yeah, I co-produced it. And here's how that came in. What's that boy's name? Big producer. Did Elton John a whole bunch of perfect. And that other cat, Elvis Costello. He did all that stuff. Well, anyway, he come in there. And what happened is he didn't really know how to deal with those blues guys.
Alan Toussaint?
No, he wasn't there, Alan Toussaint.
Right.
What's his boy's name?
I keep thinking of Spectre, but I know that.
Not one Spectre. One Spectre.
I'm sorry, I couldn't.
You put a gun barrel on your mouth. You don't mess around with that.
No.
We're in there, and this guy brings all of these supposed to be blues players in. And put Willie in a room. Willie wasn't used to that. What he was used to, like he used to do a test, guess what? All the musicians would be around him. They didn't worry about no noise or something. They wanted the feel.
Yeah, that's what counts.
So, and Willie really hated that, but T-Bone
Burnett.
Stuck him in the room. And then he sticks me over by Earl Palmer, said, keep Earl in time. I said, man, I don't want to be beside this man. I said, hey, I thought we were doing a session here.
Yeah.
He gives me one of them guitars, like you got a steel guitar, saying, help Earl keep the time.
Help Earl keep time.
Yeah, I was so disgusted. I didn't know what to do.
Oh, guess what?
They got in trouble because Willie was really uncomfortable. He was used to being around the musicians.
Yeah, being out
That's
there.
What he came up the way he did it. And guess what? He sticks him over in the room talking about vocal isolation. Willie didn't care about no vocal isolation. And so I went in the room. I told him, Willie, I said, this way they didn't script it out. Come on, let's try it. Willie was very uncomfortable. And so finally, what we did, we cut the track, and then T-Bone couldn't get Willie to sing on the track. Didn't know how. But I told Willie, I said, come on, Willie. And Willie's wife, what's her name, was there. What's her name?
I can't remember her name.
Marie.
Marie.
She was there. She told me, she said, Cash, helped Willie. Willie was very disgusted. He Willie wasn't well either at that point. She said, help my husband get this done. So, hey, I take Willie. T-Bone Burnett, Elvis Costello comes in. He got to go somewhere and deal with Elvis Costello. So that left me there with Willie. And I sung on the tape, too. So, Willie, Willie had written some great songs. That's why the album won a Grammy. What's that song? Oh, man, those songs he wrote were so beautiful.
Backdoor Man.
Yeah, that was Backdoor Man. But after all these things in a poor man's mind, you got to have the blues. You can't leave behind. Beautiful album, man, some of the songs on there. And so I took Willie and just took my time with him. I said, come on, Willie, we got to do this, okay? The keys were right. I made sure that. And so guess what? Just relax with him. The engineer was so happy that T-Bone left, he didn't know what to do with himself. So I took Willie, and Stan was there all that time. Stan wanted to play so bad on that album, but he hung. Willie was his buddy, right? So he hung with Willie. So we sit there and we got it done, man. We got it done. Willie relaxed, and that's why that album won a Grammy. Willie relaxed, and he felt comfortable.
Yeah, once you get comfortable, yeah.
And guess what? We got it done. And Willie Weeds even felt good about it.
You know, that goes back to what you have often said. We talked about this, about the performance end of blues.
Yeah.
You know, in a studio, you've got so many tools where you can overdub, but you tend to lose the feel of a tune. Now, when you work a room and you've got a live audience, you're feeding off of that audience
there
a little
it
bit.
There it is. There it is.
But when you're in a studio, you don't necessarily have that, so you've got to manufacture that, I guess, in some way, shape, or form.
See, you got it. There it is right there.
That's what it takes.
There it is.
Yeah, and that's the hard part for what you guys do, because you've got to somehow get it in your head that there's an audience. And this is something that's for the permanent record.
There it is.
It's there forever. It'll outlive us all, and you want to create that vibe. So I guess, is that difficult for you to do, or was it difficult?
Most of the time, it wasn't difficult for Willie. Willie had a built-in mind thing, and you know, he would always tell me, now look, son, when you're overdubbing, see that crowd right there, see that audience, see the spirit.
Really?
See the spirit.
So put it in your head.
Yeah, put it in your head, because guess what? Everybody does not have the talent to do this.
Yeah.
So you got the name out there. Get up off your butt and, hey, grab a hold of what God has blessed you with.
Right.
And he was always into that. Every morning I go over to his house to work on a song, he made me read the Lord's Prayer. All the time.
Really?
Well, all the time. All every the day. Time. Boy, go in there on the piano, give me the Bible. Bring it on out here. Knew the verse and stuff. And most people, before he passed away, said, Willie Dixon didn't believe in God, because he wrote that song, There May Not Be No Pie in the Sky When You Die. You remember that song?
Yes.
Well, he wrote that song, so everybody was thinking, Willie's not into God. But they don't know. Every day, here I am, and when I go out there to work on a song, he make me go get the Bible and read the Lord's Prayer. And every time I read a verse of it, he said, now, this is what this means. He said, you know, he would explain it as he goes. This is what it means. So he said, let me tell you something. There's a God out there. He said, I don't know who he is, but because of this world is progressing like it is, he said, man is getting knowledge, and he's getting more evil every day that goes by.
Yeah, that's true.
He said, the knowledge is coming, more evil is coming. He said, but you know what? You hold on to what this good book says. He said, you'll be surprised. And he went all the way back, like, to those gospel songs they wrote. What is that? I looked over to see the land of Jordan. He said that was them old Africans in the field wanting to go back home.
Yeah,
that's it. They wrote those old slave gospel songs.
Meaning in that.
And Willie, he was there. He saw a lot of that. I saw a little bit of it, because I chopped cotton and picked cotton and plowed mules. I guess it's 75.
Yeah.
I was, you know, Cash said, reminds me of something I saw Miss Ruby say once.
Yay.
She said, I've chopped cotton and I processed cotton, but I don't hoe no more.
There it is, baby.
Yeah, because she won't wear it.
She will not wear it.
She will not wear it. She will not wear it.
Really?
Yeah.
She won't wear it. She won't hoe no more.
Hoeing that cotton.
That's right.
That's it.
I tell you one thing, we all know that we all going to wind up eventually in that boneyard.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes.
We got to thinking about it the other day. See, me and Milton were playing downtown, and there's this guy. He's limps and he's kind of he's not homeless, but you know he goes and helps the musicians tote equipment. And every time after the gig, he happens, hey, Butch, can you give me a ride home? I just live up here on Mississippi. John Henry's his name. He's a real nice guy. But they won't let him in some of the clubs just because, he looks like he's homeless, but he's not. But every time we take him home, we come up the end of Mississippi, and there's four different streets. I kept winding up at this graveyard. And Milton started messing around with me. See, she calling you from beyond, bruh. Oh, she calling you.
She's calling you.
And I got to thinking about it. I was laughing, you know. And then a couple of nights later, like at 3 o'clock in the morning, boom, I sat straight up. And I had chill up my back. And I went to the piano and I started playing this thing that was in my head. And I wrote a song called Graveyard Love.
Oh, my.
And so soon I finally finished writing that, and I told one of my buddies, I just finished writing this song called Graveyard Love. He said, oh, the sequel is called The Boneyard Boogie. Boom.
And wrote it.
Here it comes.
Wow.
I got it.
The Boneyard Boogie.
The Boneyard Boogie.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Bone be writing a lot of different songs, man. He do.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
Frank Rozak has joined us, Jeff and Kate.
Yes.
One thing I always sort of demand, believe it or not, is I have to have a phone conversation with them. I don't do
Seems
shit.
Simple.
Yeah, well, you'd think. Yeah. You know, but... it's amazing sometimes, like if I'll get an email or a Facebook message and I say, well, you know, they want to know this and they want to know that. I'm like, oh, hold on. You know what I mean? And I'm like, before we do anything, you know, we're going to have a phone conversation.
Yeah.
That's really it.
We've never really heard any bad blues, to be honest with you.
Oh, I have.
Yeah, you got that doctor.
I can back you up on that one too.
That Swedish record that we had.
So I tell you what, Frank, since you haven't had a chance to look him up yet, I'm going to play you some right now.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Fascinating stuff indeed. I just came out of, I had a meeting this week with our friends over at Wizards, 1999 Madison Avenue here in Midtown. And they have lava lamps, and they had them all going. It was really kind of cool. She's got like a dozen different ones that are up on the wall in there, and they're all really cool. And it's just a constant reminder of just how groovy a lava lamp really is. You think of it as just sort of kitschy and weird, but you know, think about it. And they're really reasonably priced. This is the real deal lava lamp. This isn't the knockoff. This is the stuff that's been around forever. And they have them, and they have them online. You can buy them there. Look for Wizards Memphis. You can just search that or find their banner at our website at radio-memphis.com. Buy one, they'll ship it to you. You'll have you a large time. It's fantastic stuff, and it's from Wizards here in Memphis, 1999 Madison Avenue, open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Wizards, because it's still smoking.
Before you guys get out of here, could I favor another tune out of you two? One more.
We didn't do that. What is it? Heard of Sundown on
the... Yeah, that's the one we're talking about.
Was it on tape?
No, we didn't do it.
All right. That D-flat major 7 then.
Yeah.
One, two, three. Play me some blues there, Bone. In the wee hours.
Indeed, man, that is beautiful. Cash McCall, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Butch Mudbone. Milton, thank you, my friend. I'm sorry we don't have a proper set of drums for you, but, you know, a pickle bucket will do just as well, I suppose.
Guess what, guys? Thank you very much. This has been a lot of fun hanging out with you.
Well, thank you, sir.
This has been an honor, sir. Thank you all for joining us tonight.
We appreciate you coming down. And we're going to get the word out. We're going to get you that roof fixed, by God. Yeah.
Bless your heart.
That's the thing we do.
Thank you.
My thanks to Cash McCall and Butch Mudbone for stepping into our studios. We had such a wonderful time. We're looking forward to having them back in sometime soon. Also, my deepest thanks to Mr. Mark Caldwell for arranging this this little meeting. And it was just absolutely just a great time. He was in the room as well. So much fun to be had. Also, Avril was in there taking pictures. Avril Conway. You can find her stuff. She is the one who does all of the pictures that are on the Booze and Blues Facebook page. So, you know, you can find that there. You can see some of the pictures from that event, plus some of the other events that have occurred here in the studio. Great stuff all the way around, and more to come. You've heard what's coming up next time. How about that? Good stuff, right? Yeah. So, in the meantime, drop us a line if you'd like, RadioLand@PirateRadioStudios.com, and more fun coming as we expand our... Oh, God, I forgot to tell you. We've also expanded into the Google Play Store. We were invited to join their list of shows, and we are now in there. So if you are on an Android device and you're looking for a good place to get some podcasts for your listening pleasure, you can find us right there in the Google Play Store, and it's absolutely free, as it always is. So there you go. So, all right, I'm done. I'm out of here. Y'all take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. We'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.